your daughters, do either of them live aboard, or are they on land now?
No, they're both on land. They love to come and visit.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, like kids rebel against their parents. So if you grew up on a boat, I guess you rebel by like living in an RV or I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Welcome to the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and this is episode 282 with Pamela. Pamela has a fascinating story to share about her life aboard a 100-year-old tugboat called the Xenia Sophia. From the day before she got married, Pamela and her husband Ulrich, also known as Rich, have made this boat their home, raising their two daughters on board and creating a unique and adventurous lifestyle. We'll dive into their journey from the challenges of finding moorage for their 65-foot longboat to the exhilaration of a rocky crossing. We'll also learn about the importance of supervising children around bodies of water and get a glimpse into the vibrant liveaboard community on the Pacific Northwest coast. So let's jump right in and discover the joys and challenges of living on the water with Pamela on this episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast. Before we jump into the episode, just a quick word to anyone who is looking for more. You might be looking for more support, more information, more interaction on your tiny house journey. So I want to let you know that my online community called Tiny House Engage is going to be opening for registration for the first time since June, and that is coming on Tuesday, October 10th. Inside of the community, I am there answering questions. There are people living in tiny houses already there answering questions, people who are currently building or buying tiny houses, and tiny dreamers who are just starting their journeys. All getting together, supporting each other, talking tiny, and hanging out at some really cool weekly live events that we host inside the community. If you think this might be of interest to you, you can head over to thetinyhouse.net/engage to get on the wait list. And then I will send you an email as soon as everything opens up. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/engage. I'm looking forward to meeting you inside of the community. Again, that website is thetinyhouse.net/engage. All right, I am here with Pamela. Pamela and Ulrich have lived on board since the day before they were married. Since 1985, their home has been a 100-year-old tugboat, now named the Xenia Sophia, after their two daughters who grew up on board. Ulrich, or Rich as he prefers to be called, is a public art sculptor with major installations across the country. Pamela handles everything outside the art studio: the website, proposals, marketing, shipping, etc. Together, they have crafted a unique lifestyle. Their other interests include traveling in Colombia, especially Cartagena, cooking exotic foods in the galley, and of course, continuing to work on the Xenia Sophia. Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We were chatting before we started recording, and you asked me where I found you, and I found a tour of the Xenia Sophia on the Tiny House Giant Journey YouTube channel, and it's a wonderful tour, which we'll put in the show notes for this video. I guess maybe we could start. I want to dive into the history of the boat and kind of how it came to be, but for people who are just curious, who are maybe just tuning in, can you just talk about, like, this is a tiny house podcast. How big is the living space on your boat? Like, how big of a house is this?
Well, it kind of depends, because of course it's a boat, and so we don't have exactly square footage because we have a lot of curved space on the sides.
Yeah.
I figure we've got somewhere around 1,000 square feet.
Nice. Okay. So that's a decent amount of space.
It is. For a boat, it's huge. We're probably the biggest liveaboard. I'm betting right now we're the biggest liveaboard in Chilsol Marina.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah. 100 feet. That's long. I mean, the average tiny house on wheels is like 25 or 30 feet long. So it's...
Oh, this is 65 feet long. And oh, 1,000 square feet.
Okay, sorry. I saw 100 on my notes, and that's how old the boat is, not how long it is.
Right.
100 feet would be a big boat.
Oh my gosh, that'd be huge.
So you raised two daughters on this boat, and I you know, in the tour, you kind of go through the whole layout, and they each had their own cabin.
Yes. We all lived down below deck. Mm-hmm. And when we had the two very, very little ones, we had them both in the same bunk. It was just easier. But then they got to be older, and I realized that we could convert the other cabin. And believe me, these are teeny little spaces. These are about the size of two telephone booths. Each cabin, you know. So. But they got their own space, and they were really thrilled with that.
I'm sure. So let's talk about the history of the boat. I understand that it's gone through many renovations and also a name change. So maybe start at the beginning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She was launched in 1926 as the Edward A. Young. As Tacoma Tug and Barge. So she's always been a Puget Sound boat. But in 1969, she was converted from a standard tugboat into a liveaboard. And at that time, she was turned into the owner put two masts on her and turned her into a sailboat.
I did not know that you could do that.
Well, the hulls back in the 20s were the same for tugboats as they were for sailboats, pretty much.
Ah, okay.
These days you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a very different design and a lot of force in different places.
Exactly. So there were two masts on it. Mm-hmm. Not only that, it was rigged with these big square sails, like something that you'd think of belonged more in like the 18th century.
Okay.
In addition, they also had a cannon on the forepeak, which they would lash down and fire off when it was cocktail hour.
That's fun. Maybe not like the best for small children, but it still sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they had kids on board too.
All right.
There's a lot of families that live on board. It's always an adventure. And you talk to your kids about what's safe and what's not safe on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And if they're too young to really understand, then you're simply holding on to them whenever you're outside of the interior space.
Okay.
So then she went through a couple of different kinds of sail riggings. She was off the Oregon coast in Tillamook for a while, and then she came up here to Puget Sound. Mm-hmm. And then when we bought her in 1995, then we eventually took her. She was the Edward A. Young until 69, and then she was the Crusader. She was the Crusader from 69 until 2010 when we renamed her the Xenia Sophia.
Nice. And now, at this point, your daughters don't live on board anymore because they're grown and they live on their own. Do either of them live aboard, or are they on land now?
No, they're both on land. They love to come and visit.
Okay,
but they've done enough haulouts, so they get too close to the boat, and I don't know. We're gonna have to go to work again.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, like kids rebel against their parents. So if you grew up on a boat, I guess you rebel by like living in an RV or I don't know.
I'm kidding.
An apartment. Yeah, there you go. Well, like the haul out is something that you mentioned in the video, but I don't have a sense of what exactly that means, what is entailed in that, and how often does that have to happen?
Well, normally we, these days especially, we head up to Port Townsend because Port Townsend is the dreamland for wooden boat owners. They have so many people there that are really knowledgeable in all sorts of different ways, both for sail and for motor, because now we're a motor boat.
Okay.
And so first you drive up to Port Townsend, and then they pick your boat up out of the water, and you are watching your home with everything in it, in slings, slowly swaying back and forth. It is completely unnerving.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And you just hope that the guy who's running the lift knows what they're doing. And they do.
Yeah.
They're really professional. And then they sit you down in a part of the boatyard. And they put blocks underneath you so that you're vertical and as horizontal as they can get you. And you work on it there. But that means climbing up and down a 20-foot ladder. To get into the boat.
Yeah.
When we went for our first big haul out, we only had our one daughter, Sophia. And that was in 1995. And we were hauled out for 21 months. And living without, you know, we didn't have a sink. We didn't really have showers. We had to go and use the ones outside. That's pretty normal.
Yeah.
But then I got pregnant. And so I went through my full pregnancy, climbing up and down these 20-foot ladders, which a number of my friends thought that I was absolutely crazy. But I mean, that was our home. So I did.
That's your yet. You got to get it. And it's fun. So I have a couple of friends here in Vermont with sailboats. I live right near Lake Champlain. So there's some nice sailing to be done here. Certainly not many boats as big as 60 feet. But like when you say boatyard, like I'm like, okay, that's basically like you're living in a parking lot because that's kind of what it is.
That's exactly what it is. It's usually up in Port Townsend, they have something that's more permeable than asphalt, but that's essentially it. And you're surrounded by a whole bunch of other boats that are also up on chalk, in the parking lot.
So during the period of time that you're hauled out, this is like your chance to do maintenance on the outside of the boat.
Exactly. That's when we replace planks, and we're an old wooden boat.
Okay.
And we are an old tugboat. So our planks, most planks out there, they're probably somewhere about an inch, maybe. Our planks are 2 to 2.5 inches thick. And they can be quite long. They can be 20 feet long. And so, and we cold mold them. We cold press them into the boat. And that is where we have all sorts of running rigging that we've got. Pulling the piece, this huge piece of wood in, shaving off the sides to make it fit in exactly. It is quite the art. And we do that every single time. In the first major haul out, not only were we doing that, we were also tearing into the boat and finding out that our boat was full of much more rot than we thought. So we ended up taking off the deck completely, all 65 feet of her.
Wow.
And then found out that all of the ribs of the boat, well, the tops of those were rotten too. And so there was all sorts of work that we had to do just to get it to the point that when we put a plank on, that we could actually attach it to
something.
Exactly. It couldn't be ripple dust back there.
Yeah.
So that was it. These days, it's more making sure that our bottom paint is renewed. That's one major thing because you're always going to get some growth on the bottom, but you don't want a lot of bottom growth because that can hurt wood. It can slow you down when you're going through the water. The other thing that we do is we replace zincs. We have what are called sacrificial zincs. And if you don't have sacrificial zincs on the bottom of your boat, then there's something called electrolysis and it can turn your engine shaft. Your shaft that runs the propeller and turn it into Swiss cheese.
Yikes.
Exactly. And literally can, disintegrate your shaft. So we put lots of zinc on the bottom. And then anything else that we need to get done. And that's where our girls would come in handy in the past. I mean, they've been free labor. They end up doing a lot of work with us.
So. Yeah, well, it sounds like in exchange they got a pretty unique upbringing.
Absolutely. Well, that's kind of the thing. I mean, our tiny house versus a lot of the tiny houses, we're surrounded by tide land. And so when we get these big negative tides that you have here, you have them on the East Coast as well. You get really super, super low tides. Well, we'd go out. Me and the girls would go out while Rich was at work and we'd go wander around the tide flat.
Cool. I'll
find all sorts of interesting things there, both living and man-made, as well as, spurts of water coming up all over the place.
Yeah. I'd like to kind of learn more about just like, I know it's probably hard to say like what's a day in the life like when you're raising kids on a boat, but like I'm curious how often did you leave the boat? Because I would imagine that you're at the end of a long dock somewhere. And it's probably like quite an excursion to like get to a road and a vehicle and like go shopping for groceries.
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, especially when the girls were younger, just getting them off to school, that meant making sure that they got out of their bunks and then get them up to the galley, make sure they had something to eat and wherever they were doing their homework, that went with them. And then getting off the boat. When they were really little, everybody wore a life vest. And you don't, but when you're going to school and they got all their school clothes on, I would make sure that they got from the boat. You always have a boarding ladder, but it's only maybe two or three steps. And with the little ones, I'd just pull them off and put them on the dock. And then I would have a hand. That was why I never had more than two children. You have more than two children, you need more than two hands.
More than two hands.
Yeah, exactly. Because especially when they're little, now they've never seen anybody walk off the side of the dock, but you don't want your child to be in the cold water of Puget Sound. So I would always have a hand with each one. And we would walk every place that we were, you walked at least a couple hundred feet to get up to where your car was parked there. But as they got older, also, they were able to navigate themselves. And once they got over 10 years old, then, you know, they better be able to do it on their own. Younger than 10, I'd be with them. Yeah. But the other thing is that we have a community there on the docks as well.
Nice.
We always have other liveaboards. And everybody watches out for everybody else, and especially the kids. It wasn't unusual for one of my fellow liveaboards to yell out the gangway there. They'd open up their hatch and go, "Stop running on the dock." Because that was the last thing anybody wanted to see, was to see one of my kids or any of the other kids getting into
Ball.
Trouble.
Yeah.
As I used to tell my kids, if I hear a splash, there's going to be a second splash right after that, and that's going to be me going in the water after you, and I'll be really mad.
Really pissed.
Really pissed off.
So they always went to school. They didn't do any school on the boat. They went to school at a school.
Absolutely. They went to Seattle Public Schools all of their years. Sometimes they would be getting picked up by a school bus, but most of the time I'd be taking them.
Okay. I'm curious, like, I'll preface this question with like tiny house living in the way that many of my listeners are thinking about it, which is on a small house built on a trailer. It's like gaining acceptance. It's gaining, different places have legalized it in one form or another, but its origins are really kind of almost like pirate living, or like, you know, it's like in a legal gray area.
Well, that one's true.
Yeah, sure. So I'm curious, like, is being a liveaboard full time, this is like an accepted and legal form of existing in the United States, right?
Yes, it completely is. Now there are some communities that have a lot of liveaboards.
Okay.
I live in a very, very large marina. We have 1,400 boats here. And we have a limit of 10% of that. 10% of those boats can be liveaboard.
Okay, so like 140 boats.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why the liveaboard community here is so large. And that's also because it's Port of Seattle. It is actually publicly owned.
Okay.
Whereas a private marina is not going to be like that. But there's also a lot of people that live out on the hook. And that means that they're out in a bay, they throw down an anchor, they row in.
Okay.
We lived in one of those places while looking for moorage, because that's the toughest thing when you're a boat that's 65 feet long, is finding moorage.
Yeah.
We were in one, my favorite marina that we were in. It was a little privately owned marina. But then somebody came in and bought the marina and threw out all of the boats. So we had to find a different place to stay. Went to Lake Union, which is a freshwater lake here in the middle of Seattle.
Okay.
And then they did a huge renovation throughout all of their boats. We had to find another place to stay. We ended up being about 45, 50 minutes south of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And there we were out on a breakwater. And so every morning to get the girls to school, we would get into our dinghy and we would row in past the log booms that were covered with harbor seals and sea lions.
Wow.
Row in, and then we'd get on I-5 and battle with the traffic for 45 minutes.
Wow.
But thankfully, after that, we found a place in Seattle. But that's not easy to do.
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably a fairly coveted spot.
Absolutely. Well, and it's the same thing like with tiny houses. Where do you park them?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly.
And it's a tricky thing. You know, where does your water come from? Are you hooked up to water? What about the garbage? What about the internet? What about phone?
Yeah.
You know, now phone these days, because now, of course,
phone's
mobile,
easy.
Yeah, cellular phone is easy. Wasn't when we first started. The telephone company would run a line from the street all the way out to wherever our boat was. Because,
yeah.
Of course,
oh,
it
my.
Hardwired. And internet is not so easy either.
So I'm guessing that all those things that you just mentioned, the water, the electricity, the garbage, that's all more or less provided to you by the marina that you're staying in.
Yes, pretty much. You have to set up a lot of that. For example, all of our toilets go into what's called it's a black water tank.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a small boat that comes around every other week and pumps out our black water tank. That's a service that that is not part of the marina, and we have to find it and make sure that we set up a contract.
That it happens.
Yeah, internet, same thing.
Yeah.
And then as far as electrical, we have two systems. We have both an AC and a DC system that we have on board. The AC is fed by a really huge, like an extension cord, that's the cable is very, very thick. And that is provided by the marina. The DC system, we have to set it up ourselves.
Wow. So there's the people who I know who either own boats or spend a lot of time working on boats are like the handiest people that I know. If you ever need help fixing something or carpentry, electrical, anything, those are the people, the boat people are the people to ask.
Absolutely. Mostly because try and get an electrician or a technician of any sort to come out and work on stuff in the boat. And believe me, that was one of the reasons why I had a small dishwasher on board, because it used less water and we have a water tank, so we don't want to use a lot of water. But then it was not working and I couldn't get anybody to come out here.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, they'll say, oh, well, that, you know, your warranty doesn't cover it being on a boat.
On a boat.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is that you can't just go to IKEA and buy things or anything like that. Everything has to be fit into the boat. It has to be attached to the boat. You don't have a couch, you're going to have a settee. And a settee is like a bench, mostly because once you're underway and the boat is moving back and forth, forward and aft, whatever, you can't have things sliding around. Everything has got to be firmly attached to the side. So yeah, absolutely. I look around at where I'm sitting right now and absolutely everything has been put together other than the refrigerator and the stove. Other than that, it's been built by our own two hands, mostly my husband. I'm grunt labor. I make sure he's got tools and materials.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who does it all.
So when you're moving, you know, you described moving around to these different anchorages. How much time and work does it take before you can just leave? Because I'm guessing do you have to kind of go around and like secure things, or are you pretty much ready to just drive away, motor away, you know, today? Okay.
We're liveaboards, and liveaboards are notorious for just sitting at the dock. Now, I'm sure there's a bunch of liveaboards out there going, wait a minute. No, I sail all the time. well, then those are the ones that have much less than we do. For example, the last time we came out of haulout, we ended up staying a month later than we thought. And so we didn't come down from Port Townsend into Seattle until the middle of November. And the storms were already starting to come in. And so we knew it was going to be a rocky crossing. And so I did what's calling securing the vessel.
Okay.
I look at the boat and I kind of visualize it lying on its side and what is going to move.
Yeah.
So, for example, we have a way that we can affix a refrigerator door so no matter what, it doesn't come flying open. We lay down everything, and if anything is going to slide around, we make sure that it is either on the floor, it's surrounded by pillows or whatever. And that was a crazy crossing. That was a crossing that involved big seas, big winds, and it was the most that we have ever put our boat through, and we came through, well, the boat came through it with flying colors. I think our knuckles were a little bit white.
Yeah, I'll bet. When you're on your boat, it's your entire home and all your possessions and everything.
Yep. That's it. It was pretty exciting. So, but yeah, we don't leave the dock very often because we're 65 foot. Not only that, we weigh 60 tons. And that's because that's because we're a tugboat. I mean, we've got a tugboat hull, and that's pretty heavy. So the rule of thumb is if you're pointed at something, you better be able to pay for it if you're underway. Because you don't want to hit it. We're built hell for stout, but they may not be.
Right, right. Your boat would basically tear right through anything that you run into.
Yeah, we're pretty sturdy, and
yeah,
we also have a lot of metal towards our bow, and we'd make a mess of it.
So I know it's hard to compare because you've been aboard since 1985, but would you say that this is like a money-saving lifestyle compared to, you know, buying a house and having a mortgage and that whole thing? Or would you imagine that it's like fairly equivalent, but it's just different?
There's a couple of things. Buying a boat, you are investing in a lifestyle. You are not investing. You will never get out of a boat the money that you put into it.
Like a car. Now
exactly. So the other thing is that mortgage for a boat our size is pretty expensive. We pay close to $1,800 a month for utilities and the mortgage and et cetera, et cetera. Plus you've got other things. But so that makes it, well, the way that rents are going, it's actually, these days it's getting better and better.
Yeah.
But no, I would say by and large, it's a lifestyle that you choose because you want the lifestyle. You don't do it because you're trying to get away on the cheap unless you want to live in a 30-foot sailboat. Want to live in a 30-foot sailboat? Yeah. Which would be fun, but not for bringing up two kids. And I mean, I run our business out of the boat, and we love having big parties. And so.
Yeah. Well, tell me about the parties. How many people have you had on this boat at once?
Well, when we went back in the water, when we had the big ceremony to change your name from the Crusader to the Xenia Sophia, which, by the way, involved a toast to Neptune, an impromptu poem, and everyone with a glass of wine in their hands throwing the wine onto the hull, as well as, of course, you know, the classic champagne bottle against the bow. So then after that, once we got to our slip, we had a big party, and I stopped counting. I stopped counting at around 65 or 70 people, not at the same time.
Okay.
But this was through the evening, and we could fit at one time, we can probably fit a good 40 people on board.
Nice.
But that's pretty crowded, and that's also as people on the top deck too, which quite frankly is the best view. That's my favorite place.
Yeah.
So, and then one year we decided that we had to have a pirate party because of course we're being on a boat, you know. That was that was a fabulous. I didn't expect most people to come in costume, and they all did. It was
so oh, excellent.
Yes, we had parrots on shoulders, and we had eye patches, and somebody managed to come up with an actual sword that was in the scabbard, and we had lots of grog.
Nice.
Yeah.
And also, you know, you've got that beautiful fireplace in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Do you call it a fireplace? What do you call it?
We call it the fire pit. More than anything else, because it's on a really sturdy table, and it's a metal pit that is down into the table. And then we have a couple of different layers of metal there to make sure that everything is really safe. We have a huge hood above it. And that is when we have 10 people or less, then that's where we hang out, is we hang out around the fire pit. We cook over that. We cooked some picanha and pulpo. Picanha is a kind of a steak, and pulpo is octopus. And we just did that the other night.
Nice.
My husband is a quite adventuresome cook, as well as being a public art artist.
Wow. An artist in many regards. Culinary and sculpture. And clearly woodwork and metalwork and boat work.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank goodness, because I certainly couldn't do that stuff myself. But
you seem to make a good team.
We make a good team.
I don't know if he could do it without you. I mean, I don't know him, but
it's always a toss up, you know. It's like, could he do it without me? Probably not. I certainly couldn't do it without him, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't have babies without me either.
There you go. Well, the two of you are greater than the sum.
Absolutely. No, we keep talking about selling.
Yeah.
Because we're getting, we're getting older. It's like every couple that we've ever known that's lived aboard eventually has sold.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to do another haul out.
Yeah.
But boy, then we go and sit up on the top deck and we watch the sun going down on the other side of the Olympics, and we have a cocktail and we think, oh, we can do another haul out.
Yeah.
We don't want to leave.
When is your next haul out?
Well, we just had one in 21.
Okay.
And so we'll probably have another one in 24, 25, definitely 26. Absolutely. Yeah. 26, we have to have one. So we'll probably aim for 25.
Yeah.
And now she's 100 years old.
Wow. Yeah. Now that you've like done the whole rebuilding of the bow and replacing all the rotten stuff, how long does a haul out, like how long did your last haul out take?
Well, our last one, because we redid the bow, that was... We hauled out at the end of September, and we didn't go back in until the end of November. So that's for 2 months. That's fairly short. We'll probably try and keep this next haul out shorter yet, but it kind of depends on what we have to do.
Yeah. And you kind of won't know until you see it, right?
Exactly. We pull it out and then we go through, and plus also we'll have a survey. You have to have a survey done. An out-of-the-water survey done by a marine surveyor every 5 years, that's to make sure that you can get your marine insurance.
Got it.
So,
and that marine insurance, that's like your homeowner's insurance.
Exactly. But it's a little more complicated than that, because you need to have absolute marine insurance. If, for example, your boat goes down, not only do you have the replacement value, well, however that comes up as a part of your insurance, but it also takes care of marine salvage and any environmental damage as in oil spills or, you know, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
We ran into this because our last boat actually ended up getting burnt in a marina fire on Lake Union.
Oh, no.
That boat and the Xenia Sophia at the same time. And we were selling the older, smaller boat, but she got caught up in a marina fire. We had marine insurance, and it covered absolutely everything. including the marine salvage and the environmental cleanup.
Wow.
If you just added it onto your Allstate car insurance, for example, then you were on the hook for $35,000.
Yikes.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Word to the wise. Get the marine insurance.
Get the marine insurance. Yep. Well, you mentioned in the video tour that moisture can be a problem on boats. And I kind of smiled because moisture is also a problem in tiny houses. But what is the cause? Like, can you say more about like why there's a moisture issue on boats and what you do to mitigate it?
Well, one of the things is that you need to be watertight. Obviously.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So the combination of your watertight at the same time, you're living on water. And so you have a lot of moisture in the air. And so what happens is that it's not that it's the moist air, it's that it's the moist air that doesn't move. And so one of the ways that you can get around the moisture problem is making sure that there is ventilation absolutely everywhere. So we have small fans that we use just to keep the air moving. It's not that, well, in the summertime it gets too hot, but most of the time it's just to keep the air moving. And so if you don't do that, you'll go in and pull out that pair of leather boots that you had sitting in the back of your closet, and you'll pull it out in November, and they'll be covered with mold because of the moisture. So,
bummer.
The other thing is that our boat has a bilge, and these bilges are always, they always have some water in them. That's underneath your floorboards down below. So that also adds to the water.
Yeah. Do you run a dehumidifier, or is that not, it's just too much power?
We could. We would rather make sure that we have good ventilation, that we don't have any pockets that we can't get into. We also, rather than a dehumidifier, which, yes, the power that takes is going to take away from something else, especially in the winter months. But there's all sorts of other ways to dehumidify. There's various little, they're mineral bags that you can renew.
Okay.
They turn color from gold to blue. And then when they get all blue, you put them in the oven, you warm them up a little bit, fly off the water, and then use them again. There's any number of things. My preferred method is just to make sure, for example, we don't have any doors. We all only have curtains.
Okay.
And that makes a huge difference. Again, you don't want to have any stagnant air. And any time that we have if the weather is at all decent, all of the windows and doors are open, make sure that we always have the ventilation.
Full ventilation.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
I didn't realize that tiny houses went through that same thing, but that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a little different in tiny houses. It's more just, it's such a small space, and you've got you're living there, you're creating this warm, moist air from breathing and from cooking, and it can become an issue if it's not properly vapor sealed. And so you can get moisture buildup on the walls, on the windows, or even worse, inside of the walls. And then you can end up with mold problems.
Right, exactly. And one of the other things that we did was that when we rebuilt this boat, from the deck on up, we have a lot of insulation.
Great. Yeah. Insulation.
Absolutely everywhere, and at least 2.5 inches thick, 3 inches
good. Thick. Good. Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask about heat because I know that, you know, it doesn't ever get super cold in Seattle, but it's also like the winters are long and gray and like chilly.
Oh, yeah.
And the water, as you already mentioned, the water is cold. So you're basically like your whole house is kind of sitting in this cool, damp bath. So how do you heat the boat?
Well, one thing is that the down below, Puget Sound never gets colder than 48 degrees. That's pretty much about as cold as it's going to get. So that means it's never going to be 35 degrees or 33 degrees. And that provides a certain amount of insulation. So sure. You know that you're never going to get colder than 48 degrees down in the lower parts of the boat. And of course, heat rises. So what we have is we finally, after going through all sorts of different things, we've gone through several different kinds of wood stoves and heaters and this. So now we have a small pellet stove down below.
Okay.
And that is wonderful. It can warm up the entire boat, but that's for really cold days. That's for days that are down in the 40s or 30s.
Yeah.
And when it is in the upper 40s, then it's kind of a tricky spot. And then we have they look like radiators, but you plug them in, they're oil filled. And we have a cup, because those are the safest and they also draw the least amount of electricity.
Okay.
And so we have a couple of those that we'll use to just kind of keep comfortable. And then you wear thick socks and lots of sweaters.
Yeah. Nice. All right.
And the other thing is that we also have a wood stove in the galley. And so when we get up first thing in the morning and we're sitting around having our coffee, if it's too cold, then we crank up the wood stove. And that wood heat gets us really toasty warm in a short amount of time, and then we'll just let that burn out.
That sounds great. Do you have or have you ever had any pets on board? Is this something do people have dogs and cats?
Absolutely.
I've got my live aboard basset hound right here.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, we had three cats, one after another.
Yeah.
But we had a hard time because our kids were always letting them out. And so they'd wander around the marina and sometimes they'd end up in somebody else's boat. So then we finally decided, okay, so the last one we gave away to this wonderful family that was on the other side of the mountains.
Uh-huh.
And then we got our first dog and dogs stick close to home.
Yes.
Never any problem with that. So, and our first dog, Romeo, he had long hair. He was such a sweetheart. He was probably about 50 pounds. And then the last dog that we had was Tashi, and she was 25. She passed away about, almost 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to get another dog because they're so wonderful to have on board.
Yeah, I'll bet.
You know, anybody who's a dog lover knows what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't mean to get too like graphic for people, but where does the dog go to the bathroom on board?
Oh, not on board. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, take them off. You got that's going to be almost a demand is that.
But they have to learn to walk all the way to shore.
No, you pick up their poop on the dock.
Okay.
And,
okay.
You know, I mean, it's
yeah. Okay.
Stuff,
you know? Fair. Well,
but
we
the
don't
other
have to
thing
go.
Is that yeah. that always guarantees that the dog gets a good walk.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Nice. Well, I'm curious, you know, I hope that somebody listens to this or more than one somebody listens to this and says, you know, I'm interested in doing the live aboard thing. Do you have any recommended resources, books, YouTube channels? Just, you know, what do you recommend to people when they say, Pamela, I want to do this. I want to get into this.
Okay. If you want to live on board, this is the first thing that I would tell you to do. Go to a boatyard. Watch somebody go through a haul out.
Yeah.
And that's going to be part of what you're going to do as a homeowner. The other thing is say, oh yeah, 30-foot sailboat, that's enough room. Well, look around at your belongings and decide how much of that you want to get rid of or pay for storage endlessly.
Mm.
Now, that's the other thing. I mean, a lot of people, they don't want to move on board because they realize that they're going to have to cut down on the things that they own. Same thing with tiny houses. If you live in a tiny house, you have to say, I'm only going to keep the things that are important to me.
Yeah.
So that's one of the other things. The third thing that I would say would be, if you're with a partner, make sure that your partner is as enthusiastic as you are about living on board. Not, oh yeah, that kind of sounds like an interest, but enthusiasm. because I have seen many couples break up because one of them, either the woman or the man, different in different cases, is so enthralled with living on board, but the other one just kind of gets dragged into it. And like I said earlier on, you're choosing a lifestyle. This is not an investment. You're choosing a lifestyle.
It's not something to be taken on lightly.
No, not by any means. And the other thing is, there are live aboard associations all over the place.
Okay.
And go and sit in on their meetings. Get a hold of me. I love talking to people about living on board.
All right. Well, Pamela, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. It was so fun to meet you and learn about your lifestyle.
Yeah, this was really fun. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much to Pamela for being a guest on the show today. You can find the show notes, including a complete transcript and some great photos through the years that Pamela shared with me over at thetinyhouse.net/282. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/282. Also, don't forget to check out thetinyhouse.net/engage to learn more about my awesome online community and get on the wait list to join so you can find your tiny house family on the web. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/engage. All right, that's all for this week. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.